Vladimir Putin delivered his long-awaited speech to his nation, address to his nation, which, if I may say so, sounded a little bit desperate, a little bit, not quite defeatist, but a little bit accepting of the inevitability that his war had stalled, that he was a little bit on the defensive, and now he was looking at consolidating or keeping whatever he's got so far, which is almost, I'd say, at this point, about 15-16% of Ukrainian territory. So he said that if anybody tries to take this territory from me, then I might launch nuclear weapons against them. So now nuclear weapons have become a defensive weapon to keep what he has. So it's a bit like, if you remember that old song, Mukesh song of self-pity, Mujhe tumse kuch na chahiye, mujhe mere hi haal pe chhod do. I think it was a 1959 film, Raj Kapoor film. The lyrics were written by my favorite lyricist of all times, Shailendra. So at one level, it almost sounds like Putin, if not wallowing in self-pity, but basically suing for peace on his own terms, saying that let's stop the war here. Jo tera hai, wo tera hai. Jo mera hai, wo mera hai. So whatever I've got, let me keep it. Unlikely that Ukrainians will let him do it. But more importantly, unlikely that Ukraine's backers, that is the Western powers, particularly the US and other countries in Europe, will let him keep it this way. So they will keep building the pressure on him. Now, in that situation, does Putin have any cards left? All right, he talked about, he threatened the use of nuclear weapons. So while he's held out a nuclear threat, we know that nuclear weapons are never to be used. We know that it happened once in the history of humankind, but not again. Because if you use nuclear weapons, the consequences are terrible, of course, for your victim, the enemy, the adversary, who you use nuclear weapons against, but also for yourself and for your people. Because the world is not going to be looking silently at any country today that uses nuclear weapons. On the other, least of all, on a country which is for all practical purposes is a NATO and US protectee, that is Ukraine. So leave that aside. If you leave that aside, does Putin still have some weapons left? So you might remember that some time back, maybe 4-5 months back, we had an episode of Cut the Clutter, which had talked about a debate which had emerged in the Western media about Putin using two generals in his armed forces, General Oil and General Food Grain. What happened was, as the war started and as Black Sea got blocked, so first of all, in any case, because of the sanctions and the war and the disruptions, global oil prices went up, crude oil prices went up. Now they moderated a little bit, but they're still on the very high side, but they moderated. Gas prices went up, and then the sanctions started, particularly on the Russian banking system, etc. That created big problems around the world. So one weapon in Putin's arsenal was General Oil. So unless you let me have my way in Ukraine, minus the sanctions, without the sanctions, be prepared to pay the price in terms of very expensive oil. So that was General Oil. The second was General Food Grain, that in case you don't force Ukraine to accept the ceasefire on my terms or accept my terms, in any case, I will not allow the evacuation of food grain from Ukrainian ports. And Ukraine, as we know, between Ukraine and Russia, they account for 70% of the wheat in global grain markets. So that had stopped. Now that led to a big outcry, particularly in African countries, large African countries, which import a lot of food grain, particularly wheat, but also maize. And they need that really badly because they are really short and would have been impossible for other countries to make up for it. India used to sell some wheat overseas, but last year India's harvest also, particularly in Punjab and Haryana because of the early onset of summer, had not been that good. So there was a global shortage. Finally, because of this global public opinion, Russians had to relent. So through a three-way agreement between Russia, Ukraine and Turkey, this grain started going out. Turkey, why? One, because Turkey is the world's most consummate mediator right now, particularly in the Eurasian region. And second, for anything to come into Black Sea or go out of Black Sea, they have to use those passages which Turkey controls. So this was a UN sanctified arrangement. So General Food Grain then went out of the picture. General Oil remains in the picture. But once again, it would have looked like the world's getting used to it, and maybe in the course of time the world will get more used to it because alternatives are emerging, other sources are becoming available. But you know what? Oil and gas are global commodities. They are global commodities. So people, maybe Qatar, Senegal, Ghana, many of the other countries which have natural gas, Australia, they may be able to fill in for the shortages coming out of Russia, but they will not give you at the same price as before. So this is a global commodity, prices go up. So that is one situation. That problem is not gone. That problem is going to get worse now. And that's where Putin is looking at the most successful Russian general in the history of modern warfare. When we say modern warfare, we go as far back as to Napoleon's times. And that is the third general which has as yet never failed the Russians. And that is General Winter. Now, General Winter is this deep, long Russian winter. That is the old term. That is where invading forces, Napoleon, Hitler, etc., they get stuck, their supply lines get stretched, and their troops find it difficult to deal with that cold weather, etc., etc. And then when the winter starts to lift and sort of the spring begins to come in, that's when the snows melt. So there's piles of snows that melts, and that leads to the creation of heavy mud. And that is where armed forces columns get stuck. So that mud is also sometimes called Rasputitsa. And that's how the biggest armies, the most successful armies against the most brilliant generals have been defeated in Russia. Now, Russian winter. You might say, okay, this is in Ukraine. So Ukrainians are as used to the Russian winter as the Russians are because it's the same landscape. Right? If anything, because Russians are invaders, they will suffer in Ukraine because of the winter and Rasputitsa, because it is their supply lines that are stressed. So we are not talking about the battlefield there. The battlefield for Putin, for Ukraine, is not in Ukraine. It's all over the world, but particularly in Europe, because it's much tougher for him to break America's will. It's much tougher for him to break the rest of the world's will, because if his instrument was food grain, that is unworkable, because Russia also is deeply caring or deeply concerned about its own image in Africa and also in parts of Asia. So Russians are not going to push the food grain issue that hard. But gas is something else. And this is when winter is setting in Europe. And that's what makes the availability of a 21st century General Winter to Putin. So what is happening right now? Before we get there, if I tell you a few things about what's happening in the countries of Europe, because what Putin is trying, he's trying to break Europe's will. And he thinks that public opinion in Europe, because all of the rest of Europe is democratic, and he thinks that public opinion in these countries, because public will get so fed up of having to pay a higher price for their heating, winter energy, gas, electricity, etc., that they will put pressure on their governments to reduce their support to Ukraine, or in turn put pressure on Ukraine to settle on Russia's terms. So he now sees an opportunity. This is about the, we are now coming to the end of September. Winter will be here about 6 weeks from now in those parts. And he thinks now is the time that he's got a General Winter in his hands, because by next year, if this goes on, he may not have the same general available to him, because by that time, the world would have found solutions around the problem. But this is the first winter since the war began and since the sanctions began. So this is his opportunity. Now, if you want to understand what this opportunity is like and what kind of battlefield or what kind of ground conditions this General Winter is looking at. The earlier ground conditions were snow, minus 25, 30 degrees Celsius, temperature, long winter, stretched supply lines, and then the mud, etc., etc. The ground or the terrain that this General Winter is looking at is characterized by inflation rates all over the world, but especially in Europe. If you see Europe, Europe has had welfareism for a very long time. Europe, even those countries which have been run by conservative parties or right of center parties, or even during the periods when the most right of center parties have run those countries, like, say, for example, Margaret Thatcher in Britain, there is also a deeply ingrained welfareism there. So citizens are looked after, there is a lot of welfare, state support, etc. So people are no longer used to dealing with deep hardships over long periods of time in Europe. That is where Americans are much tougher, but Europeans are not. So Europe is the soft underbelly of the Western alliance, and that is what Putin's looking at. What is the terrain this General Winter is looking at? It's looking at inflation rates, I told you. Look at Germany, and we are now just taking the movement over a year, and you will see these graphics run on my screen as I speak. So Germany, exactly a year ago, that is August 2021, was 4.1% inflation, which is that inflation rate of 4.1% in August last year, 1 year back, was also high by the standards of a developed Western country. But all these developed Western countries led by the US, US is the most important example, they just printed money and distributed it free in one form or the other to their citizens to help them tide over the COVID crisis. That in turn created inflation because we just printed so much money. That was 4.1. That is today 8% or 8.1%. So it has doubled in a year. For Germany, 8.1% inflation is very high. Then UK was 3.1%, again exactly a year back. Today it's 10%. It's gone up more than three times. Again, part of it is, or primarily it is, because they printed all this money during COVID and distributed checks and distributed a kind of unemployment dole, or maybe for businesses that had shut down, a kind of a dole. But also now, because food prices and energy prices are going up. So you've seen Germany, you've seen Britain, others are no better. France 2.2 to 5.9, almost three times. So 5.9 would today look like moderate inflation by today's standards, inflation standards in the world. But still, it's three times of what it was last year in France. In Spain, it was 4% last year. At this time, it's 10.5% now. Italy, it was 2.5%, it's 8.5% now. So Germany, UK, France, Spain, Italy. We have listed for you the biggest European countries besides indeed Russia and Ukraine. So all of these are reeling under inflation. Even the US had nearly doubled from 5.4 to 9.1. They have now moderated a little to 8.3 because the US Fed has been upping its rates quite aggressively. But once again, there is a problem in the US as well. Although the US is not short of energy, they've got their own. But once again, remember, energy is a global commodity. So the prices of all energy keep pace globally. So it's not as if Americans produce their own oil and gas, so they will sell it cheaper, because that is subsidizing their own consumer, which means government has to print more money, and that leads to more inflation. Now, to understand this situation more accurately, or better, or more sharply, we have to understand the explosive mix that this inflation rate, already quite high and rising, this inflation rate, the lot of distress with the lower middle classes, with the middle classes, and definitely with the poor, that combined with high energy prices, what an explosive mix this is now. In this situation, then you have the coming winter that Putin is hoping will provide the spark, and there will be street protests. If nothing else, there will be a rise of the political right in these European countries. And in these European countries, by and large, the political right is pro-Russia or pro-Putin. Now, if you look at fuel prices, essentially gas prices, natural gas prices in Germany, Italy, Britain, the Netherlands, gas prices are already 210% up since the war began. In Germany, things are now so difficult, the German government, Olaf Scholz's government, is thinking about putting a lot of people under housing welfare so their needs could be looked after at a minimal basis by the state, because they think they'll not be able to survive on their meager incomes with these rising energy costs. Then, in many of these countries, this situation is also compounded by the fact that these countries, because they are so politically correct and Greens have become so powerful there, that they decided to shift to renewables, which is a very good idea. But how do you shift to renewables? It's more expensive. You have to invest more in renewable energy. You have to incentivize people to build renewable energy. Also, European countries don't quite have the sunshine benefit or sunshine advantage that countries like ours have, with many, many months of full sunshine in a year. So it's been quite expensive for European countries to make this shift to renewables. For that shift, they've raised money by making energy more expensive for their citizens. So energy already was expensive in these countries, and now it's becoming even more expensive. It had been made expensive because of higher tariffs to fund the shift to renewables, and now it becomes worse. And that is why we are now seeing these very, very fraught statements coming out of the governments in Europe. For example, German Interior Minister Nancy Faeser, she's been quoted as saying, and I quote, "Enemies of democracy are just uniting to abuse the crisis to spread doomsday fantasies, fear and uncertainty." Now that fear will become more and more real as the winter comes in and gas prices and energy prices start going up. Now the situation in Europe is such that it looks like on all estimates that this winter, most households, most middle class households will be spending 20 to 30% of their monthly expense only on energy, because you know, in the winter, in extreme cold weather and extremely dark weather, because you get so little of sunlight, you need to consume a lot of energy to keep yourselves warm and to give yourselves a healthy working environment. Now, what can Europe do in the long run? Now, long run is very far, because in the long run, the old line is that we'll be all dead, or maybe in the long run, all our problems will be solved. So you see Europeans who are brave, for example, Ursula von der Leyen, who's the European Commission president. She says, look, we don't have to worry so much about the Russian gas. Our dependence on Russian gas was 40%. Now it's down to 9%. European leaders are going to Algeria, Qatar, Senegal, Congo, Canada, etc., etc., looking for gas. But once again, the issue is the same, that even if they get the gas from there, even if they've shifted from 40% Russian gas to 6%, from some place the remaining 35% will come. And that will cost according to international prices. So once so much of the Russian gas is out of the markets, global prices will continue to be up. Now, there are lots of things which are being done symbolically. Eiffel Tower, for example, used to be lit till 1 a.m. Now it switches off lights at 11:45. How much power it saves, I don't know. But the fact is, it's a symbolic message. Politicians also like to do messaging. In Britain, it's now being estimated that things will get so bad this winter that 1 in 4 households may decide not to heat their homes. Now, which is terrible in British winter. How people will manage that, you can imagine, and how irritated and how upset people will be with that. In other parts of Europe, especially Germany, and I'll share a story from the Washington Post with you, please see it. Look at the run on firewood. Suddenly people are stocking up firewood. Firewood prices have gone up. Coal prices had gone up already. Now firewood prices are going up. Suddenly chimney sweeps are in demand. So chimney sweeps are being summoned to clean up chimneys that people haven't used now for many, many years to burn wood and coal in there. So that lead to more pollution, more carbon dioxide emissions. So once again, think of the stupidity of this idea of shutting down nuclear power plants, which in Europe have been completely safe, where neighbors of Germany are successfully running nuclear power plants, notably France. But the Germany shuts it down under the pressure from the Greens, and then people run firewood. In fact, in Germany, there are stories of firewood being stolen by the truckload from its forests as well. So this is a kind of a desperate situation at a popular level. So I see a lot of commentary saying that this can be a situation of winter rages, when tens of thousands of people come out on the streets to protest, which is just what Vladimir Putin wants to see. Now, everybody is getting worried about this situation. Olaf Scholz in Germany, the German chancellor, he said, for example, that I think that people will struggle to cope with this, these rising energy prices. And he said, this is becoming a social tinderbox. So he's worried, as every other elected ruling party, elected leader in Western Europe right now. And why would the opposition leaders lose this opportunity? So leader of the center right in Germany, who is the preeminent opposition leader, Friedrich Merz, who is the preeminent opposition leader in Germany of the Christian Democratic Union Party, which is a kind of liberal conservative center right party. So he says, for example, he attacks the ruling party and ruling coalition for shutting down the nuclear power plants under pressure from the green parties, whose votes and whose seats they need to keep this coalition in power. So he says, and I quote, "Have these Germans actually gone crazy to shut down three nuclear plants that would be able to safely supply to 10 million, that is 1 crore households, with electricity?" 1 crore is a lot of households anywhere, but think about it in the context of a small population like Germany. And then he goes on to say that this may please your Green Party base, but it possibly does irrevocable damage. And once again, I'm quoting, it causes, quote, possibly irrevocable damage to Germany's image as a business destination. So the opposition is sharpening its knives. We see this in country after country in Europe. In Britain now, Liz Truss, the new prime minister, has said that she'll try and freeze the energy prices. If you do so, and global energy prices going up, you will have to print more money and give subsidies, which again feeds into inflation. And Britain, by the way, is not that dependent on Russian gas. Britain has its own oil and gas. Britain only buys 4%, has been buying 4% of its gas from Russia. But once again, the same problem, it doesn't matter where you buy energy from, it is priced globally in global energy exchanges, global commodity exchanges. So once again, wherever Britain gets its gas from, it will still pay an elevated price. In Italy, Mario Draghi, these are his last days as the leader. Then there'll be a general election. So the country is in a very politicized mood. So Mario Draghi, as almost his last act, has given his industry a 14 billion euro assistance to help them tide over their increased energy costs. But once again, his opposition, Matteo Salvini, who's his main opposition leader, also from the right-wing party, he's saying this is too high a price. What the hell are we doing this? So the calculation Putin is now making is that this crisis this winter, rising prices, popular distress, particularly among the middle and lower middle classes, the poor in any case, but the lower and the middle classes, the poor might still go to the left, but the lower and the middle classes, remember, they were also the people who brought Trump to power. So once they get angry, then they turn far right. And the far right in Europe is by and large pro-Russia. So the far right politicians, the far right parties in Europe is by and large pro-Russia and pro-Putin. It's a bit odd. You would have thought that far right might be pro-America, but they are not. They are more anti-America, and in this case, more inward-looking, because today's right worldwide is more inward-looking, more xenophobic, and more protectionist. So they see no such great merit in paying such a high price just to keep Russia out of Ukraine. So that is what Putin is now looking forward to. Putin is hoping that come this winter, as Europe suffers, as the lower middle classes in Europe suffer, and Europe's governments come under pressure, either they themselves will make changes, or the rise of the right in these states will bring about political changes, and he will be able to win on the political battlefield what he seems to be, at least until now, losing on the military battlefield.